Welcome back, one and all, and children of the revolution. This is Daddy Ben Bear, Ben Brown Jr., your host, show producer, webmaster, audio engineer, researcher, videographer, and writer, doing it here on the DIY, on Ace of Spades, PDX.com's What You're Not Listening To, the audio educational and anthology series. And today we're having a layover in Tago Mago. And this is a look at one of the strangest progressive rock albums in history by German group Can, featuring a Japanese lead singer with an influence that would be felt less in traditional rock circles, but prove highly influential on alternative rock and indie music. There's an old saying that a band can have little success after changing lead singers. In the case of our featured artist today, it was true until it was not true. Can, a band from what was then called West Germany, was one of the leaders of Komisch music, and Komisch is a German word for strange, born out of a political struggle in the late 60s and early 70s, and labeled krautrock, a derogatory term dubbed by the British press. Their original lead singer was Malcolm Mooney, a black man from the United States. He struggled with his mental health while in the band and lasted for only Can's debut, Monster Music, and several soundtrack cuts, which appeared on a compilation album that followed. After his departure, two of the members of Can, bassist Holger Zucke and drummer Jackie Liebeseit, found Japanese-born Damo Suzuki busking for change on a street in Munich and invited him to join the band. After a couple of soundtrack cuts, the band released their proper second album, Tago Mago, named after an island in the Mediterranean that was, according to legend, visited by renowned British occultist Aleister Crowley, where supposedly demons were summoned. Okay, sure, why not? The album, a double, brought Can to the attention of the press, who hailed them as one of the most exciting bands in the progressive rock genre, which was big at the time. Unlike their contemporaries, however, instead of a focus on technical virtuosity, Can use editing techniques, much like Miles Davis's producer Tio Macero during his electric period, to create their unusual sound. The band were also heavily influenced by jazz fusion, James Brown, the Velvet Underground, and Musik Konkret pioneer Karl Stockhausen, giving their sound the most radical of all their prog rock contemporaries. By the time of their next release, Ich beim Yassi, the band would suddenly become a top-selling act at home and found their sound, which had started to become more ambient in nature, a massive influence not on traditional classic rock, but on what would eventually be called indie rock and alternative rock, with many musicians, including Sonic Youth, Thurston Moore, calling it one of his biggest influences. Suzuki would stay with the band until the mid-1970s. Can attempt to use other singers, but could not pull off the success they had with him. In an ironic twist of fate, the last Can studio album, 1989's Right Time, found Mooney returning to the mic. And I'm about to get a little geeky here, okay, because this is an educational program. Yeah, I know I stretched that more than I should. There's a feeling, particularly in Europe, that krautrock, which is a term I really don't even like using because, again, it came from a derogatory subject matter. And trust me, as a member of a dispossessed population, I understand about the power in reclaiming words that were once derogatory toward a particular group. I still don't like it. It sounds really, well, kind of lame, in my opinion. And I really do like Komisch music. And there's a feeling in Europe that krautrock and Komisch music is not progressive rock, and that this, believe this or not, that this is a truly American-only concept. And to these academics, you know, these are the same people I would sit around and argue with, like, there were not 10 chords and I Want to Hold Your Hand. It was only 8. That is not a G major because it gets that stupid. All right. Do I call krautrock progressive rock? Yes, I do. Is this a U.S. concept? Yes, it is. Guess what? I'm from America. Deal with it. Alrighty then, now that all of that is out of the way, okay, our music geeks are probably saying, oh my god, yeah, because this is what we do. Alright, the first, you're going to understand that this program is going to be about 40, with all this rambling, will be about 40 minutes in length. Now, we're going to be playing about 35 minutes worth of music, 36, something of that nature. That's literally half the album. Kind of. And you're going to find out why the first track. And this first track is the best known song from this album. And one of the best known songs by Can, even though it was never a big hit for them. It's been in 3 different versions. The original version on the album, Tago Mago, took up an entire album size. It was approximately 18 minutes or so. The second edit was from a single only B-side, which was reduced to 3.5 minutes, believe it or not. It was the B-side to Turtles Have Short Legs. Yes, that's a, it's because it's canned. And then there was another edit that they included on compilation albums that is the best known version of it. And that's the version we're going to hear here. You hear it in soundtracks all the time. It has this intense, heavily sampled by hip hop artists, drum and bass just groove to it. It's crazy. And most recently it was heard in the soundtrack to the film The Bling Ring. This is the second edit, I should say, still recording these in one take live, of Hallelujah. And we will see you just before the grand finale. Welcome back, one and all, and children of the revolution, to what you're now listening to, the Audio Educational Anthology Series, here on Ace of Spades, PDX.com, and I'm still Daddy Ben Bear, Ben Brown Jr., all-around monkey bear, doing it all here in the DIY, as we take a look at Tagomago, the second proper studio album by Can, and my God, what a trip it has been. Kick it off with the second edit of Hallelujah, Paper House, which was the first track on the album, and then Mushroom followed that, and Mushroom is a another one of those songs that's been heavily covered by a lot of indie rock bands, particularly Spoon, which were heavily influenced by Can as well. There's like five different well-known alternative rock bands who have taken their names influenced directly by Can as well, including the Mooney Suzuki. And this song in particular, if it sounds, at the time it sounded incredibly radical, but now it sounds like almost every other hipster indie rock band out there, right? Okay, we're going to be in a studio and we're going to have just the drums and the bass. It's going to be a little echoey and I'm going to just recite lyrics to make those sense. It's very Pavement, right? Another band that was heavily influenced by Can. It's great. I love it. And Damo Suzuki, if you can't understand what he's saying sometimes, you have to understand that he didn't really have a language that he chose to sing these songs with, sometimes in English, sometimes German, and live. And sometimes their shows would go on for hours. And I mean, literally, one was, I think, clocked in at 6. I can't even make this up. Can you imagine him? 6 straight hours. Was singing Japanese as well, because reasons. And that's just the way it was. And that's what made Can then and still now so incredibly different. As far as getting back to the progressive rock term, when I think of progressive rock, I think of like in terms like of indie music. Does that mean truly just independent people, or is that some slow, mopey coffee house thing? Because when I say progressive rock, people think of groups like Yes and King Crimson and ELP and all that kind of stuff, Pink Floyd. When I think of the term progressive, I think it'd be really stretching boundaries. And I can't think of a band probably that this is more apropos to that tag, maybe Captain Beefheart during their Trout Mask Replica period, yes, because it really just was like that far out. And really, you know, if you thought it sounded far out then, it sounds even more out of place now, which makes it even more incredible. Alrighty, now we're getting into our last track here. There's only 4 tracks in this whole program. And this again, so sides 1 and 4 had like multiple songs on them, and then sides 2 and 3 had only 1 track on each. And this is from side 3, and it takes up the entire length of the album side. It's about 18 minutes long, and supposedly, according to the band, I still can't figure out how, but that's not my place to figure out how. It's my place to enjoy it and play it and share with all of you. Was influenced by Aleister Crowley, and that is the reason they chose the name Tagomago. There's because of that connection. Again, it's a very Can thing, I gather, that you don't know is part of the joy, I guess, in it. There are moments, right? We all have them. I have a lot of them, actually. People just don't make sense of me, and I'm okay with that. So if you have questions, feedback, comments, dedications, love letters, and requests are always welcome, please drop me a line at DaddyBenBear, one word, DaddyBenBear @gmail.com, or find me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, or on my design site as well. And if those of you who are going to the broadcast page, just type in the name Ben Brown Jr., and my design site is aospdx.com, and it's about to undergo a radical updating. It's been a few months, and I've just got a truckload of things to share with you on that. Love to you all. And for the next 2 weeks in March, we will be looking back at my International Jazz Day programs in 2017, yes, featuring soul jazz. And it'll be an edited program from the 3 hours that we did and then to probably about an hour and a half, just a little over 2 weeks. And getting ready, of course, for International Jazz Day 2021, where I'll be featuring Billie Holiday. Love to you all. This is Ong.